is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
He was as open and blunt as he could be about what the coaching profession was like. I will never forget this statement that he told me. He said, "Do you really want to do this for real?" And I'm like, "Yeah, coach, absolutely." He's like, "Okay." He said, "There's two things that you got to be. You got to either be half stupid or half crazy to do it." And I was just like, "I guess I'm both."
Edwin McGee is the men's basketball associate head coach at North Park University in Chicago, Illinois. McGee joined North Park after coaching for 4 years at NAIA Lincoln College, spending last season as the team's head coach. In his one season at the helm, McGee guided Lincoln to a Chicagoland Collegiate Athletic Conference tournament runner-up finish and picked up a pair of wins against nationally ranked opponents. Prior to joining the Lynx, McGee spent 2 seasons as the national postgraduate head coach at Victory Rock Prep in Bradenton, Florida. During his 2 seasons at the prep school level, McGee also served as the associate head coach of the Victory Rock Prep national team. Edwin played his college basketball at DePaul University from 2010 to 2014, where he was a 4-year letter winner. He began his career as a walk-on and ultimately earned a full-ride scholarship by his junior year. McGee got his start coaching in 2014 as a graduate assistant for DePaul University, spending 2 seasons at his alma mater. Hey, Hoopheads, this January, our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball introduced their all-new CT Plus machine with a 21.5-inch touchscreen that allows players to train offline, build custom drills, compete in multiplayer mode, and view their stats in real time. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on their Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT Plus models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Matthew Radbard, author of Lead Like a Pro, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
The first training camp Elite Skill Development and Performance Combine will be held on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, powered by Unleash Potential and the Hoopheads podcast. The camp is designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9 and will take place June 29th through July 1st, 2023. An emphasis on improving individual skills in the context of a team environment will be the hallmark of the training camp. Mike Klinzing from Head Start Basketball and the Hoopheads podcast and Joe's Decision from Unleashed Potential will serve as the camp directors of this inaugural training camp. Campers can expect 3 days of hard work, intense skill instruction, and learning how to be a great teammate on and off the court at the training camp. Players will participate in 10 elite skill development sessions led by some of the best coaches from across the country. Visit headstartbasketball.com to get registered. Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improve communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Take some notes as you listen to this episode with Edwin McGee, men's basketball associate head coach at North Park University. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight, but I am pleased to be joined by Edwin McGee, the associate head men's basketball coach at North Park University in Chicago, Illinois. Edwin, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Mike, thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Excited to have you on. Looking forward to diving into all the things that you've been able to do in your basketball career, both as a player and as a coach. Let's go back in time to when you were a kid. Tell me a little bit about your first experiences with the game of basketball.
I'm probably dating myself or aging myself right now, but I was born in 1992 in the prime Jordan era. And obviously I was too young to kind of understand what was going on, but, I had parents, who were, you know, raised in Chicago. So, we had all this bull stuff around. And, by the time I was about age of 3 or 4, I had my first, Fisher Price rim in the living room. So, I think that's probably where it really started, was with that Bulls era. And, you know, my mom was a huge fan, you know, her being born in Chicago. And I have two brothers, that, you know, one is actually about 13 months older than I am. And, you know, at that age, you know, we wear the same things. So we just get, my mom got two of everything. And, only thing different we had was I had a Scottie Pippen jersey. And there's a picture somewhere hanging around at the house. I had a Scottie Pippen jersey on and my brother had the Mike Jordan jersey. So, and we're probably about 3 or 4 years old. So that's kind of where it started off. And then from there, it kind of took off to playing like some YMCA leagues, you know, in the 4th and 5th grade, just finding a passion for it and loving to compete and play. And, I didn't, as a younger, player, I didn't play a lot of other different sports other than basketball. So that was kind of my first love and first passion. And, you know, I would play with different travel teams and, you know, anywhere I could get in a gym and get some shot up or play was kind of what I did. And, we had our own rim at the house and outside, and we had neighbors that would come over and we'll play 2-on-2 basketball. My brother and I against 2 other neighbors. And that's kind of what we did. So, hoops has always been in my blood. And, you know, I'm blessed to be able to continue to be around hoops, for such a time as this. And, you know, as long as I have. So, yeah, it's part of me and it's been part of me for a while.
How competitive were you and your brother?
Very competitive. And, you know, he'll probably say something different, but I lead that series all time. For sure.
Of course.
You know, if he listens to this, he'll know for sure that, I lead that series, all time. But, it was very competitive. You know, we grew up in a competitive, family and, winning, you know, it's not everything, but it is important. So, you know, the way that we went about it, there were battles in that backyard that, you know, sometimes we can't speak about, right? Because, how much of competitors we are, but, at the end of the day, it was all love and it was all fun. And that's kind of what, you know, continued to draw me to the game. It's the love, it's the competitiveness, it's the, being able to connect and, be around different people, different cultures and things of that matter. So that's kind of what it was. And, you know, till to this day, I would say that I'm still that fiery competitor I was, you know, back when I was 8 to 10 years old. So.
What do you remember about your early youth basketball coaches? Is there one particular one that stands out or something that you learned from one of those coaches that you still carry with you today?
Absolutely. There's probably quite a few, but one in particular is with my 7th grade, coach. His name is, Coach Jagnon. And he was the first coach that I would say that I can, you know, pinpoint where the love of the game really flourished from how he coached. It didn't matter how old we were. It didn't matter where we were from. He coached us as if we were trying to win a national championship. And that was something that I really appreciated back then. And, you know, one thing in particular that I remember from Coach Jagnon is that, you know, growing up as a little tot, you know, sometimes don't have the most, perfect mechanics when it comes to shooting a basketball. So I was, I would be shooting the basketball with 2 hands and it would go in. So I thought I was like, hey, I'm good. I'm ready. But there was this, summer, I think leading into from 6th grade to 7th grade that, I was just in the gym at our middle school and Coach Jagnon would be there. He'll be there. He'll meet me like 8 a.m., 9 a.m. in the morning. And we would literally do like form shooting and shots for an hour to an hour and a half. And, ever since then, you know, I would credit, you know, the way that I was able to shoot the basketball to those times where, you know, he's poured into me and spent time with me, learning how to shoot the basketball the proper way. And, you know, that's something that, you know, I appreciate it. And, you know, not a lot of people will get, you know, as far as, a coach who takes time, especially at that age, that really wants to see you succeed and really wants to see you get better. So it was definitely him that kind of sparked my interest in, as far as, you know, what it looks like to really be coached and play the game at the high level, at a high level.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, having somebody that takes that interest in you at a young age, obviously that can have a huge impact on your development as you go forward. It sounds like, so again, you're talking about sixth grade into seventh grade. It sounds like you were pretty serious about your game. As you said, it was the only sport really that you were playing. So what'd you do in the time you could take it from, let's say, as a high school player? What were some of the things that you were doing to get yourself better? How much were you playing pickup basketball? How much were you playing AAU basketball? How much were you in the gym working on your game by yourself? Just give me a little bit of an idea of what your routine was. Let's look at maybe an off season, a summer off season in high school, what that looked like for you.
Yeah, for sure. I think so I'm originally from Champaign, Illinois, and, you know, it's U of I country. Everybody knows it from the Fighting Illini. And there was always good basketball and good players in that area that, you know, were older and, you know, would play at the parks. We call it the six pack. It was on campus. And we'll go to the six pack every Saturday, probably from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. And these aren't just normal basketball runs. These are grown men, coming from all over the town that's going to play at the six pack. And there's three courts that's going on at one time. And there's a winner's court, a loser's court, and so on and so forth. And it was extremely competitive. And, so over the summer, that's what I would do. I'll go out, I'll go play. You know, I'm probably not getting the most shot attempts, but I'm playing my tail off, trying to prove my worth and, you know, be able to hang on and hang on one of those teams and not get picked last and, you know, those things. So, that's kind of what I did, you know, my first like freshman and sophomore years, in high school and then in, kind of towards my junior and senior year, I kind of leaned more into getting more skill development, you know, at school. And, we had a coach, Coach Verdell Jones, who also had a son who played at Indiana University, some years ago. He used to hold sessions at our high school and, you know, we'll be in there for about an hour and a half, 2 hours, working on skill development, working on different reads and those things. And, that's how I would spend my summer, especially my junior and senior year. The crazy thing about high school was, though, is that was the first I started actually playing football as a freshman. It was the first time I started playing football. And, you know, I was like, you know what? I'll try it out. My friends are playing. All of my guys are playing. I'll try it out. So, I got my first kind of taste of football. And that was my freshman year. And then I think it was summer training camp or something like that. I had like strained a ligament in my leg really bad, hurt like for weeks. And I was like, yep, that's it. I'm done. Not playing. You know, I'm going to stick to this hoop thing. And, you know, going into my sophomore year, I told all my friends, I was like, yeah, I'm just going to stick to the basketball thing and, you know, just call it quits on the football. And our head football coach at the time, varsity, he hurt, like got a whiff of it. And, you know, I was a decent athlete. So I could catch the ball. I could run a little bit. So, you know, he saw some promise in me, I guess, in the football field, and he would like come get me out of class just to talk to me about playing. It's like, hey, we're going to play you as a sophomore in varsity. And I'm like, nah, coach, I'm good.
That sounds like a lot of football coaches I know.
You know, I'm like, you know, coach, I'm good. And, so he actually got my homeboys in on it too. He's like, man, gotta get Edwin to play. Gotta get Ed to play. So, you know, my guys got in my ear. So I decided to play my junior and senior year, football. But, there was kind of a time where there was a rift because I was really, really serious about basketball leading into my senior year. And that's when I was really in the gym really hard. And the same time I was in the gym at that time was the same time that we had two-a-days for football. And I was just telling coach, like, hey, coach, like, I really want to play basketball, you know, at the next level. I will be there for the first official practice, but, you know, this summertime window I have is dedicated to hoops. And he understood, so which was nice. And, I got to kind of get the, you know, best of both worlds as far as making sure that I was, putting all my effort and energy into, to hoops as well as football once that season had, had occurred. So that was kind of my high school, I guess basketball story when it comes to that. And it was, memorable for sure. Love the competitiveness, that we had. We actually got to play, so 2009, our crosstown rivals won the state championship and they kind of, they had to run through us, at the regional tournament. So, it was super competitive, a lot of fun, a lot of great basketball players from the area at that time. So it was something that I always look back to and be like, man, that was a fun time.
That's obviously a great memory. Do you have another one, something that sticks out as your favorite memory from playing high school basketball?
It's a great question. I do. So my senior year, we had a fellow classmate who didn't play basketball. He was a tennis player. But he was just like the ideal guy and the ideal student, like straight A's. Just was one of my good friends. We had a French class. He was in my French class. I'll never forget. And there was like six of us in there. So it was just like, we always had this interaction and, he was a huge Illinois fan. And I was telling him that I was, you know, at this point, I was just, you know, taking visits to Purdue, nothing like official as far as like visits or anything like that, just visiting schools. And he was like, you better not go to Purdue. And I was just like, gotcha. And, during our senior year, he went in for a gallbladder surgery and, come to find out once he was going into surgery, they found tumors, in his body. And, you know, he didn't wake up from the surgery. And, you know, he was, and for us as a class, it devastated us, because he was such a like, his name is Keegan Banning. Shout out to KB forever, man. He was just an ideal dude. And, you know, when we heard the news, we're just like, there's no possible way that it could be him. Right. And, our senior day, myself and a couple of our other, students or people in the class got an idea of just, we got blank wristbands and we wrote KB, all over them and we wore them for that game. And we had a student section, that was, you know, maroon crazies and everybody had their KB wristbands on. And, that game was dedicated to him. And, I remember the last play of the game, my point guard is pushing the ball up the court and, throws a behind the back pass and I'm trailing him. And literally as the time is expiring, I go up and two hand tomahawk it.
Nice.
And the student section rushes the court and everybody's pointing at their KB bands. And, I was like, that memory will stick with me forever. And, you know, it was a sad moment, but at the same time, we knew that KB was still in there with us. And, that was probably not even probably, but that was the most memorable moment I had in high school as far as basketball was concerned.
Absolutely. I mean, I can completely understand when you have somebody that you're close to that you lose and then, as you said, it's a sad moment at the same time to be able to experience that and to, in some small measure, try to be able to dedicate that game or that experience to him. I'm sure A was meaningful in the moment. And then clearly, however many years later, 10, 15 years later, you're still remembering that. And it's going to be with you, as you said, for the rest of your life without question. As you started to look ahead, as your high school career is coming to an end, what were your thoughts in terms of going to college? I know you ended up as a walk-on at DePaul. Was your thought process, I want to try to play at the Division I level and go and walk on? Was your thought process of, hey, I had some other smaller offers and just decided this was the best fit for me? Just walk me through your mindset at that point.
Yeah, for sure. Just to be completely honest, I think I was young and naive, to be honest. I had some Division IIIs, Division IIs, junior colleges. I had some interest from several different colleges, and you know, I didn't have my parents as far as basketball concerned. Like, they're great parents. They were at every game. They, you know, supported. My mom had her big camera there filming everything, like, you know, we were going to the NBA, right? So, but from the basketball, like, leading standpoint, understanding, like, what recruiting looks like, I didn't have, you know, I didn't know.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Like, I didn't know what a Division III offer was or a Division II offer looked like. All I knew was Division I, right? I had a couple of my friends that I grew up with, who were big time basketball players in the area. They were going Division I, and people that were at our high school that were older than me, they went to, you know, so those were the things that I remember. And I was like, man, I got to go Division I. So that was kind of how it got to that point of getting to DePaul. And the funniest thing is, and you know, I'm a huge faith guy, and my father's a pastor. He's been a pastor for like 45 years or so. And, when I started applying for schools, DePaul wasn't even on my radar. And, there was this one day, like February, and usually at this time, like, you know, February, like ending my senior year, usually about that time, people have decisions and they're in, you know, find out what they're doing in that March and everything. And, you know, I was kind of content. Like, you know, I was going to go to Purdue University and try to do the walk-on thing, there. And my dad was like, hey, have you thought about DePaul University? I was like, Dad, I don't even know where DePaul is. I'm not even gonna lie to you. That's what I told him. I was like, I don't even know. He's like, it's in Chicago. I was like, really? And he was like, yeah. So he was like, just go online and see if you can, you know, apply and see what you do, what you can get. And I jump on. I'm like, Dad, nah, man, it's too late. Like, people are getting accepted to places like this, and this. So I jump on and I look and I'm like, look at that. They got late application process. So I jump on it, get my application in. And then, after that, they kind of had like just a general, visit day where I went up with my parents and toured campus and everything. And I immediately fell in love. I fell in love with the city, fell in love with the campus. And I was like, yep, this is the place I want to go. And, you know, try to see if I can play at the Division I level here. And, that's kind of how it went. And that was kind of the thought process I had. And, you know, shout out to my pops for pushing me towards, you know, at least getting that application in. And I, you know, I believe God always has a reason for things. And I know that he definitely led me to DePaul University.
So there's a lot of people out there, players, coaches that are, I think are unsure about what the walk-on process looks like. I think there's probably just, like you, not knowing a lot about what that process looks like. I think there's a lot of other people out there that were currently are in the same shoes as you. So tell us a little bit about what the process was like for you once you decide, okay, I'm going to DePaul. Then how do you go from I'm going to attend DePaul University to I'm going to be a walk-on and get involved with the team? What did that look like?
Yeah, so that's it's probably one of my more fun stories to tell. So when I first got to campus, it's called the Ray Meyer Rec Center. And if you're, a blue demon like I am, you know where the Ray Meyer is, and you know that, it's super competitive basketball. They got Saturday morning runs and people come in at night and play basketball. So I was in the Ray Meyer day in and day out. And, there were a couple of like older, you know, upperclassmen that were there, older guys that were there, and they had an intramural team. And, you know, I was in there playing and I was playing pretty well. And there's a couple of those guys was like, hey, you want to play on our intramural team? And I was like, I don't even know what that is, but yeah, let's do it. Like, as long as it's competitive and I can play, I'm down. And, you know, I was a freshman at the time and all these other guys were like seniors and, you know, I'm playing pretty well. And they're like, man, you might want to try out. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I definitely want to, like, you know, how did that look and things of that matter? And there was, one guy who came back, who actually played for DePaul years before I got there. He came back just to visit and he saw me play and he was just like, hey man, you probably should go try out. Like, I think you have a good chance. And that kind of gave me the encouragement I needed. And, you know, I found out when those tryout days were and, went and it was about a 2 to 3 day thing that, they had, and all they really did was, or what happened was there were like, you know, 5 or 6 guys that were trying out and we came in and we practiced with the team. It was like in the summertime, almost beginning of fall. And we just go in and we're practicing with the team for the first 2-3 days. And, you know, I'm watching these dudes. These dudes are incredible athletes. And, I'm a decent athlete at the time, but I'm like, man, these dudes are good. They can play. Like, how am I going to stick out? Like, not stick out for the guys who's walking on, but how am I going to stick out for everybody that's already on the team, the guys who are on scholarship? That was my thought process. And I was just like, all right, I know what I'm good at. I know I play my tail off and I'm competitive. So there was a segment where, you know, you lose a drill or whatever, or it's a conditioning segment, that we're running sprints. And I kid you not, for every sprint that we ran, I didn't lose. So I beat everybody that was on scholarship. I beat everybody that was trying out. Like, I was running, you know, for my life, it felt like, you know. So I wanted to make sure everybody know that I came in first in those sprints. And, you know, I probably didn't even shoot the ball maybe but 3 to 4 times in there, but I know I was the first one up and down the court every time they had a sprint. And it was a great experience. It was a tough experience because, you know, we were practicing with those dudes who were scholarship players and some dudes who've been at DePaul for 3-4 years. And, so it was a lot of fun and it was just really, really competitive. And, the process after that was, you know, I went home and I went back to my dorm and I got a call from the GA at the time. And he called and said, hey, we want you to come back and, you know, just practice a few more days with the team, and, just see how it fits and all these things. So, I was like, all right, cool. So, you know, I'm in that now. It's just me. Right. Like none of the other guys that were invited back. So it's just me and I'm not really in practice. I'm like off to the side, like doing some shoot drills, ball handling drills, things to that matter. And, you know, I'm doing this for like two more days and, you know, I'll go back to my dorm. I get another call and he was like, hey, I want you to come back and, you know, I want you to talk to coach and meet coach and talk to him, coach Brunell about, you know, being a walk on and things to that matter. So, I get back to the gym the following day and, it's the GA, and who's actually, Brandon Bailey, who's now with the Detroit Pistons now. It was the GA at the time. And Brandon called me and he was just like, hey, yeah, come back to the gym. And Coach Brunell was standing there and he was just like, hey, Edwin, we thank you for, trying out this year and we appreciate you coming in and playing your tail off. And, but unfortunately, this is like verbatim. I will never forget this conversation. Like, unfortunately, we're just going to go with the guys we have, but we appreciate you. We hope that you come back and support the team this year. And like Brandon is standing next to Coach Brunell. And as soon as he says it, Coach Brunell leaves. And Brandon was just like, he's looking at me and I'm looking at him. I was like, hey man, thanks a lot. He's like, wait, what did he just say? I said, he told me that there, you guys are good. He's like, just wait 1 second. So he like sprints out the door, go gets Coach Purnell, brings him back in. He was like, Coach Purnell's like, I'm sorry. I thought you were someone else. And I want you to go upstairs, grab some gear, come back down. And we want you to practice today. So, you know, I'm still like in this trial phase. I'm like, I don't know if I made it or I know if I did. So there was this one practice I remember we went out to, Allstate Arena. It's like our first practice out in Allstate Arena, which is in Rosemont, Illinois. And, you know, I'm in practice where I'm like on the kind of the scout team, with another walk-on who's already on the team. And there was this one play where I shot faked it at the free throw or the, 3-point line, like the top of the key, took about 2 dribbles and I just took off 1 foot, boom, dunked it. And I was just like, whoa, I did not see that coming for myself, but, that was nice. So like that was like kind of the icing on the cake. So when we got back on the bus and got back to campus, Coach Brunell like pulled me to the side. He was just like, you probably know by now, but we just want to officially offer you a walk-on spot on the team and you can call your parents and let everybody know that you're officially a Blue Demon, and a part of the Blue Demon program. And, I was, you know, obviously very, very grateful and thankful and super excited, you know, called my mom and my dad right away and let them know, like, man, this is a blessing. And it's kind of started from there. So it was kind of a up and down situation, if you would, as far as actually getting on the team. But nevertheless, it happened the way it should have.
That's hilarious. I mean, it's funny just to think about how that whole process went, and Brandon, the GA's got to run out and go get Coach Purnell. That's just, I mean, I could see it. I can see that scene playing out in my head. I could picture it as clear as day, what that looked like. And again, how you had to be feeling in that moment and trying to figure out, am I on the team? It seemed like I was going to be, and now maybe I'm not. And then I am all of a sudden. And so
I'm sure everybody asked, like, I got cut and put on the team in the same day. So you never know what can happen.
That is entirely true. So once you get that official word and you start practicing with the team and whatever, how did it go in terms of, I know you hear all different kinds of stories depending upon what program you're with and the type of guys that you're with, and in terms of just the way that the walk-ons are incorporated into the team, and you hear good stories and you hear bad. So I'm assuming that yours, based on what I'm hearing and what I know about you, it sounds like it was probably a pretty good experience for you pretty quickly out of the gate, that the guys brought you into the fold and you felt like a part of it right from the start.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I think that, I got friends now that I've, best friends now that I've met, on those teams that we still talk about every day, guys who were in my wedding, all those things. So, it was for me, the reason why, love the game is just being able to meet and impact new people, right? Like, my most memorable moments of being on the team is when a new class came in, right? And there's new freshmen, and we get to develop a relationship with these guys and bring them into the fold and all those things. And that's how I felt. I felt welcome. When I got on the team, there were obviously, upperclassmen, and there was other freshmen who were, scholarship guys that I kind of hung out with and got close with. And the big thing about it was they didn't treat me like a walk-on, right? They invited me to, if they wanted to get in the gym, they'd say, hey, let's get in the gym. If they wanted to invite me to a little event, hey, let's go to this event together. Like, it was, we always hung out with each other, which was big time for me, and it felt welcome, when I got there. And, for me, it kind of led into having more of a vocal role, as far as, being on the team, which is, very rare for walk-ons, to have that kind of voice. But it ended up, by my junior year, where Coach Purnell actually deemed, myself and another one of our players, co-captains. And, that was a huge honor for me, not playing as many minutes as I would want to play and all that, but knowing that I had, impact on that team and had a voice on that team was huge. And, there's seniors that's asking me questions about things that I was like, that I get to interact with the coaches about. And, so it was just, it was a great experience for me to kind of push forward and understand, like, this is kind of what I could do for the rest of my life. I feel like I can be that guy who can bring together a group and encourage and be vocal and, have that impact on people. And that's how it pretty much started, was with that team and being able to, be a walk on and have a voice as a team. So, or on that team. And, eventually, that ended up kind of leveraging into a scholarship opportunity in my junior year. And I'll never forget this moment either. It was, we're on break and it's Christmas Day. And, I get a call from Coach Purnell. He calls and he was just like, hey, Ed, I hope everything's going well. And I was like, yeah, what's up, Coach? I'm nervous as all get out because I'm like, Coach has called me on Christmas Day and everybody's is on break. Like, what happened? Like, what I'm saying?
Right.
But he calls. He was like, hey, we talk to the AD and we want to extend a scholarship for you for the remainder of this year, next year. And I was like speechless at one point. I was just like, thanks, Coach. I appreciate it. And, I won't let you down. And we hung up after that. And I, like, tears start to, like, fall out my face. And I'm just like, man, you know, as a walk on, you know, and you see those stories and you see those stories on, you know, now it's more, public of these stories, the walk on story to get scholarships and, which are very cool stories. And I was, you know, grateful to be a part of that fold. And, having that moment, man, where you get that call and you feel that the work that you put in has paid off, man, it was nothing like it. And, I ran in and I told my parents and they were screaming and yelling and it was a big, big moment for us. So, but that kind of solidified my thought process of, man, like your leadership, regardless of if you played or if you didn't play, it mattered, right? And you were, you impacted the team in the right ways. And for me, that's all I wanted, right? Like obviously, you know, wanted to play and wanted to get on the court more times than not. That's everybody's dream, right? That's what everybody wants to do. But having coach, you know, believe in me and having my teammates believe in me that I can be that guy that can, and, you know, motivate, the guy that can lead, was bigger than having or playing 30 minutes a game to me. And that's where I really started to feel the passion for wanting to stay around the game and, you know, eventually leading into coaching. But there is, I will say this, I had my 15 minutes of fame, as a DePaul Blue Demon was had an 8-0 run against Providence by myself.
Nice.
That was the big one. I was at our place. We were down eight. I started off with two free throws and we went down. We got a stop. I sprinted my tail off to the corner. When our point guard hit me in the corner, catch and shoot three, bang, go back down, sprint. And I'm like, I'm feeling it now. I done made two free throws in the three. Give me the ball. You know what I'm saying? And I'm still like, that's it. You know, it had to walk on, but I'm like, hey, give me the ball. So I'm sprinting and he's pushing the ball. Our point guard's pushing the ball. And I have the audacity to yell, trail, trail. He pitches it back to me and I step in like nobody's business. Hits the front of the rim, boop, and it cashes right in. And I'm just feeling myself. That I was like, that was my 15 minutes of fame. So when everybody asked me, it was like, how many, what's your career high? I said, I had 8 points in a row. And that's my.
That's awesome. That is very cool. High.
So
how often do you pull that out on video?
Oh, yeah. Every time, you know, I talk to some of our players and like, McGee, did you? Hey, man, listen, I had an 8-0 run in the Big East versus Providence, man, like it was big time business. So, yeah, definitely pull it out, you know, from time to time, just to show these guys that, you know, I'm not just blowing smoke.
Absolutely. That is very cool. Those are some good stories, Edwin, for sure. So I'm guessing you were a really good student. And I know that when you went into school, were you thinking coaching at all when you first went to school, or was getting named the captain and kind of just feeling your way through that leadership piece of it and really having somebody else recognize that? Is that what led you to think, hey, maybe coaching's where I want to go?
Yeah. When I originally went to school, I wanted to be a broadcast journalist. I love SportsCenter. Stuart Scott was my guy.
Booyah.
And, you know, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I wanted to be him. And that's what I went to school for. So I'm in broadcast journalism classes from, you know, my freshman to sophomore year. And then I kind of pivoted and I took a class called, the class is called Communication and Dating. And, it was an elective at the time. And it was probably the craziest class I've ever been in because it was me and it was like 20 other women. It was just me. I was the only guy in the class. And we would have these conversations in communication and dating. And, you know, all the women in the class are chiming in. And our professor goes, Ed, you got any thoughts? No, I do not. I agree with everybody.
We're not stepping out on that limb.
No. And that kind of segued to me earning a double major in relational communication. It fell under that umbrella. And with the relational communication aspect of, so it talked about, you know, marital relationships, friendships, platonic relationships, all these type of different relationships. And one thing that I kind of focused on in my study, particularly, was the dynamic of coaches and athletes and, that dyad. And those are the things that I really kind of tapped into when it kind of came to like my research papers and those things. And as I continued to learn just about the dynamics of how, coaching reflects different attachment styles and those things, it started to kind of intrigue my interest even more. So, you know, that's where I got my master's in when I started to be a GA. But, going into it, coaching was so far from the thought of it when I got there. I wanted to play basketball. And, you know, after I graduated, I was going to be on ESPN and call the games. So that was kind of my thought process heading into school.
So as you get done and you're wrapping up your playing career and you're getting ready to graduate, and you start thinking, hey, coaching's what I want to do. I'm assuming you went in and had a conversation with Coach Purnell, if not once, certainly multiple times, about what direction you wanted to go with that. And then you ultimately end up getting an opportunity to stay on with the program with the Blue Demons as a GA. So talk about how that came to be.
Yeah. So I was, I had initial conversation with him, prior to leaving for the summer. And I talked to him. I was just like, hey, Coach, if there's an opportunity to be a graduate assistant, I would love to hang around and help out the program and those things. And, you know, he was like, yeah, for sure. We'll get in contact with you. And, this was probably like May when we had this conversation. And then about late June of that year, I get a call back and, you know, asked for me to come up and we sat down and talked and he was as open and blunt as he could be about what the coaching profession was like. And, I'll never forget this statement that he told me. He said, do you really want to do this for real? And I'm like, yeah, Coach, absolutely. He's like, okay. He said, there's two things that you got to be. You got to either be half stupid or half crazy to do it. And I was just like, I guess I'm both. He was
there,
like,
you go.
He said, if you're both, then you're ready. So, you know, ever since then, I'll never forget that when he told me that. He told me, he's like, there's going to be days where you're going to miss, you know, he was giving me examples like you might miss your daughter's recital because there's a game that day, or there's, you know, something that's going on with the family that you just can't get to. And he's just kind of breaking down to me like all the things that could happen when it comes to this profession. And I was like, you know, at this time, I'm 22 years old. I'm not far from thinking about a family. And I'm like, oh yeah, I can handle it. I'm good. Like, yeah, that sounds good. So, that's kind of where it started there. And then, that August is when I officially joined the staff as a GA with Coach Purnell.
What was the transition like going from a player under Coach Purnell to being a colleague and working alongside him and kind of seeing what was going on behind the scenes, maybe things that you weren't necessarily aware of or even knew what was going on as a player?
Oh, yeah. That's a great question. First of all, it was humbling to say the least. You go from the guy who's getting their stuff washed, right? The guy who's watching the stuff, right? Watching the jerseys and watching the laundry. And, it's funny because there was teammates of mine that I had the year prior that I'm now making sure that their grades are okay and making sure that they're in the gym and making sure that their jerseys are washed and make sure they're hung up. Like, it's just a humbling experience from that aspect of it, because obviously, you know, you go from kind of the top of the totem pole to like right back to the bottom. And, but it was a great experience altogether when it comes to that, because of what I learned, right? Learning what humility looks like. Learning what serving looks like, right? Which are huge things that you got to have to be, I believe that you need to be a effective coach, right? And those are the things that I learned right away. And then obviously being under Coach Purnell and understanding what it really looks like to function at a high level as far as college basketball is concerned, is very different, right? Like from a player standpoint, you know, you got practice, you got weights, you got to go to class, and it's like, you just keep it going. And we got games, right? When you're on the other side, right, you still got practices, you got games, you got weights, but then you got to make sure the scouting reports are done. You got to make sure that dudes are going to class. You got to make sure that we're all at this event for community service, then you got to make sure that guys who need to go to night class have their train passes to get downtown because they can't miss that class. And there's a lot of things that go into it, right? And this is kind of what I tell, you know, I obviously I'm still a young coach, but this is the one thing that I tell coaches going or younger coaches who are trying to get into the profession is 80% of what you do is non-basketball related as a coach, right? Like as far as X's and O's and being on the floor and doing, that's just the 20% that you get. Everything else, right, as far as the organizational aspect of it, making sure that things are in line, like that's the biggest portion of it. Because if you don't have these ducks in a row, the 20% doesn't matter. So, you know, I know there, you know, several, you know, younger coaches that I've talked to who have a different thought process of what coaching really looks like. You know, oh man, I can coach. I can be on the court all day and this and this. And I'm like, yeah, for sure. Like that's part of it, but it's a very small portion.
Yep.
Of what goes on, right? The behind the scenes portions of making sure that everything is together. And, you know, you got travel done. You got to make sure the dudes are, they're training, they're eating, are eating right. And making sure that again, grades are right. And that's the 80% that I think a lot of times younger coaches coming up might miss on, that they don't understand that this is the most important. And that's what I really learned is, you know, from the outside looking in, you know, as a player, you just think like, all right, I don't know what the coaches are doing in their offices all day. You know, I think they're just waiting for practice to start.
Right. Exactly. Like, yeah. They're just sitting around drinking coffee, whatever.
Why are you guys here so early? You know what I'm saying? Like we're going to practice till 2 p.m. You know what I'm saying? So like as a player, if you think, but then, you know, there were nights where, you know, we're traveling to Syracuse and we fly back and, you know, myself and, you know, the assistant ops guy and a couple of managers, we fly in, get on the bus, get back to campus, and it's 12 a.m., but we have to have, there's a grade report sheet that coach wants on his desk in the morning. And, you know, we got to make sure that's done before we even leave so we can have it on his desk. And he gets in at 7 a.m. And so it's like those things. People, you know, it's, you know, at that level, Division I level is a little different where, you know, there's a lot of things that go into that. So, but that's just, you know, that's just one example of like, hey, this is kind of the behind the scenes. Like there were days where I might have to sleep at, might as well just sleep in the locker room, you know, because we got to be here at 6 a.m. anyway. And we got to be back at 2, 3 a.m. By the time I get home, I'm waking up. So, it's just like those things that, You gotta understand, and again, part of that humility aspect and that servantship aspect that goes hand in hand when it comes to coaching.
Those are all really good points that I think a lot of people sometimes miss, especially when you haven't been in the coaching profession or you're just thinking about it. People see the glamour, but they don't always see all that behind the scenes stuff and the late night getting back from a trip and making sure you got this done and you're in the office at 6 a.m. and you're there till midnight doing X, Y, or Z, and especially. Yeah. When you're talking about as not as the head coach, but when you're on staff and your job is obviously to do whatever it takes to be able to help the program and to be able to help your head coach be successful. And if you want to have a successful career, those are the things that you've got to do. And I think sometimes people go into it with maybe not their eyes wide open about what it takes. And I think very quickly, no matter what level you start at, I think you find out pretty quick that
100%.
It's not all, as you said, it's not all glamour. It's not all, hey, I'm just out working with the players or we're diagramming plays. We're doing X's and O's. Yeah, that's a part of it, but there's certainly a lot more that goes into it.
United Basketball Plus is your doorway to all things basketball. If you desire to go further, faster as a coach and leader, if you want to maximize your team's potential, or if you simply just want to be a student of basketball, United Basketball Plus is the resource to take you to the next level in your basketball journey. As a member, you will have access to some of the greatest minds in basketball today. The in-depth videos provided by these coaches and basketball experts will help make difficult concepts simple to understand and teach. With your membership, you will have access to video playbooks, sports psychology, fast model playbooks, skill development, speed agility, and various other United Basketball Clinic videos. Your annual membership also includes access to our 2021 United Basketball Clinics, as well as discounts to attend future basketball clinics. The best way to find out all we have to offer is to visit us at unitedbasketballplus.com.
As you were wrapping up your time as a GA, what were you thinking about in terms of your career path at that point? Were you for sure, hey, I want to stay at the college level? I know you eventually ended up going down to work at a prep school in Florida. So just tell me a little bit about what your thought process was and then how that opportunity came to you at Victory Rock Prep.
Yeah. So, by the end of my second year as a GA, so I was blessed and fortunate to do 1 year under, Coach Purnell, and then do my second year under Coach Dave Lato, who were both big time mentors for me. And I can still call to this day, which is a blessing. So, at the end of my GA second year of being a GA, I approached Coach Lato and just, asking for, just advice and, if there's anything that he knows or openings that he knows that I should, get myself into. And, unfortunately at that time, our staff at that time was new. So all the positions on our DePaul staff were filled. So there was kind of no, wiggle room to kind of get, or to stay on at that point, which was totally understandable, which was fine at that time, right? So there was a guy by the name of Jimmy Drew, who I played with, who's actually head coach down at Lincoln University, Missouri right now, D2. We were teammates, and I was a freshman, he was a senior, and then he became my GA once I was continuing to play. He was our GA at that time too. So, I knew Jimmy for some years at this point. And Jimmy was down at Victory Rock Prep, at this time and, working with the post-grad team and working with Coach Lauren Jackson, down there. And, he called because he was kind of on his way out down there, and he called and he was like, Hey, what you got anything going or what's going on? I said, man, I'm still looking for some things. Like, I'm still, I want to coach and I want to, be around players. I want to learn and I want to grow in this profession. And he was like, man, this would be a great spot for you. So, he actually connected me with Coach Jackson, who was down there at Victory Rock Prep. And that's kind of where that started when it came to stepping into the post-grad prep scene, down in Florida.
What'd that look like, compare and contrast with DePaul?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's obviously a different level, right? You as a coach down there, your responsibilities are heightened, right? Because there's more, not necessarily more to do, but you are so close to the players at that level, right? Where you got to make sure everything is all the ducks are in a row, right? And these are no longer really grown adults that you're taking care of. These are kids. And I think that was the biggest difference because, maturity levels are different and how you got to approach situations are different, when it comes to that. And for me, I count everything as a blessing. It's a blessing to see what it looks like to coach at, the Division I level and then what it looks like to coach at a high profile prep school level too, right? Two different levels, but ultimately, it was still a place where I could learn. It was still a place where I could grow. It was still a place where I could develop relationships, which was that's what you want to look for when you take jobs, right? Those things are some of the key elements to that. And, like I said, it was different, right? And it was a lot more hands on. We're the ones driving the vans every day, right? to get to practice and get to games and get to school. And, we got to make sure the guys are fed. So we're going to Walmart, dropping them off at Walmart, picking them up. And, it was a lot. It's a humbling experience, but, the relationships that you build with the kids and the relationships you build with the other coaches there, it all pays off. And it's this, a blessing to have that opportunity to impact another set of group of kids. And, for me, it was so much different and so much eye opening because that prep school in particular, we had a lot of kids from different countries. And to have a lot of kids from, we had South Sudanese kids, we had kids from Belgium, we had a kid from France, we had a kid from Italy. We had a kid from Croatia, like, and then to have them in this kind of melting pot where, you know, you can interact with them and you can learn about their culture and you can learn about what they eat and what they think is good music and what, you know what I'm saying? Like, that experience was probably the most fulfilling experience that I had down there, because the fact that you get to really understand different cultures and have that experience with those guys and try to meet them on a level where, you know, everybody has different backgrounds, things of that matter, but what connects us is this game of basketball, right? And that was one thing that I would never forget with my experience down at Victory Robinson, was the amount of culture that I was exposed to and amount of stories that I had from different players about, you know, what home looked like and the differences that they saw from home to here and all those things. So, you know, I'm still close to some of those guys that I coached down there. We're still great friends to this day, and we FaceTime, we call, we talk. They still call me for advice, and, you know, I just try to give them the best direction that I can without telling them what to do, because as a coach, you want guys to be able to make their own decisions. And once they can kind of make their own decisions and feel confident in them, that's when you know you impacted them in the right way. So, yeah, now that was a wonderful, wonderful time down there too.
Building those relationships and going from a staff on a Division I level where you have a bunch of guys and a large staff and you can delegate duties, and then you go to a situation where, as you said, you're driving the bus and you're doing the X's mm-hmm. and O's and you're washing laundry and you're building relationships with the kids and you're doing all the coaching and everything. I think when you get to be sort of that jack of all trades and get your hand into every piece of coaching, it's interesting when we've talked to coaches at all different levels, and, you know, some guys break in and they're at the Division III level and they're the only assistant and they're doing a million things. Yeah. And you have other guys like yourself that break in on the Division I level where you have the staff and you kind of get to see how a bunch of different people work and you kind of have specific duties. And it's just interesting to think about everybody's career arc and how eventually what you do is you end up at all your various stops, you end up getting these different experiences. And it's always interesting for me to just talk to people and hear what they remember or what they carry with them from each of those experiences. And I think yours, talking about getting a chance to learn from people from other cultures, again, like, how many times do any of us get a chance to interact with a group of people from that diverse of a background and learn from them? And I'm sure not just as a basketball coach, but just as a human being, 100%. To be able to have those experiences and be able to bond with those kids and learn from them. And I'm sure just like they learn from you, to me, that's really a huge piece of, when you think about it, beyond just the basketball court, beyond your career as a basketball coach, just as a person, to be able to grow, especially as a young guy like you were at that time, being able to do that, I'm sure has had an impact on you everywhere in every aspect of your life.
100%.
And eventually you get an opportunity to go back to the college level and you go back to Illinois at Lincoln College as an assistant. How does that happen? What contacts do you have there? What connections help you to get that job, or how does it come across your desk?
Yeah. So, the biggest sort of I'm just going to go back to what you were talking about beforehand before getting to that.
Sure.
Another difference too with being at that prep school level was a different type. I learned a different type of skill, which was learning what recruiting looks like, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, at that prep school level, you're recruiting kids for not just one team, but we had 3 to 4 teams, right? And you're trying to make sure that, you know, you're calling different parents and having interactions with parents and things to that matter. And, you know, making sure that, you know, if a kid wants to take a visit, you got an itinerary ready and all these things. And, I think that, you know, having opportunities to coach at these, so on, you know, quote unquote, lower levels helps with development of skill sets, right? Like, if you have to do, you know, get your hand in everything, you got your hand in academics, you got your hand in travel, you got your hand in recruiting, you got your hand in X's and O's, you got your hand in, you know, teaching, whatever it is, right? Now you can take these transferable skills to your next job, right? Whether you might need them or you might not. Right. But at the same, you have that skill set. And I think that's one thing that's overlooked, especially when coaching at the lower level, is the amount of experience that you get, the hands-on experience that you'll get. And, you know, kind of leading into your Lincoln question is, I had a guy that I was working with down in Victory Rock who was connected to the current assistant at Lincoln, at that time. And he was on his way out, and, he called, the guy that I was working with at Victory Rock. He was like, "Hey, you know, are you interested in this? Like, I'm about to get out, this thing, this and this." And, you know, the guy I was working with was like, "Hey, no, I'm actually not. I've got something already in the works." And he gave, the guy my number, and he called me. He said, "Hey, would you be interested in coming back and coaching at Lincoln and this?" And I was just like, "Yeah, man, I was trying to get back into the college level." And at this time, I was very unfamiliar with what the NAIA was, to be honest. You know, I knew Division I, Division II, Division III, JUCO, you know, prep school, obviously, but NAIA was, you know, foreign to me at the time. And, I knew that they were transitioning from junior college to NAIA, and it was going to be a 4-year, institution at that point. And I was like, yeah, I want to get back, closer to home. I want to get back into the college level. So, I had a conversation with, the head coach at the time, who was Pat Lepper, one of my best friends to this day. We talk almost every week. And he, you know, he called me, and we had the interview, initial interview, and, he went through my references and those things. And, he called my current boss at the time. He called, Coach Leto at the time to see and, to kind of get a background on me and, how my work ethic was and those things. And, you know, this all happened in like June, of 2018. And then in July of 2018 is when I officially got offered the job, and I left Florida in August. So, it kind of was a rush sped up thing, but, you know, I wanted to get back to the college level and get to that, have that opportunity to coach college basketball. So I jumped on it, right? Like, and you know, at the NAI level or any smaller college level, you know, pay isn't crazy or anything like that. So you're doing it out of the strength of loving the game and wanting to coach and wanting to make an impact. And that's what I wanted to do, and was blessed and fortunate to be on a staff where, you know, we were very open, very transparent, about goals and, you know, not just individually, but as a team. And, we had some pretty good players, at Lincoln College too. So that always helps. And, you know, we were pretty successful, at that time. So it all worked out. And like I said, like, I think, you know, this is again, faith based speaking on my behalf. I believe that I'm called to not opportunities, but assignments. And what I mean by this, I think that God assigns me to different locations and different situations at certain times. And I say this because I was at Lincoln College my first year as an assistant. And, there was this kid I coached at prep school, literally the year before post grad. And he went to a Division II school, and he, at the Division II school, this just didn't work out, and had to leave. And he calls me. He was just like, "Man, Coach McGee, like, I don't know what to do. I can't go back here. Like, I just want to go somewhere and play this and this." I said, "Hey, man, listen, you can come here. I'll talk to coach and, you know, I'll let him know what your situation is, but we're going to try to get you here." And that time it all happened in like a week. He came down, he visited, got him registered, and, you know, we were rapid about it, and we got him in, and he ended up being a 2-year starter, led us in scoring that year, and ended up an honorable mention All-American at the NAI level. And, you know, that part of being at the right place at the right time, really resonated with me, because if I wasn't there, or if he couldn't call me if we didn't have a spot, like, what would have happened to him, right? He probably would have never been in school. He probably just dropped out or whatever it would. I don't know. But I know that my assignment was to be at Lincoln, and not necessarily just for him, but just to be around those individuals and around those student athletes that I was assigned to and God knew I needed to be around. So that was huge for me. And I was, you know, always think about, you know, whether it's at the highest level possible or, you know, at whatever level that I'm coaching basketball is, am I in the right assignment, right? Not necessarily chasing that opportunity, but am I in the right spot where I'm supposed to be impacting a certain group of people?
That's a powerful statement. I mean, it really is when you think about putting yourself into those positions where you can have that kind of impact and looking at it and asking yourself and knowing, hey, I'm in the right spot and I have the right feel. And again, as you said, when your faith leads you to places and then you have things that happen to you while you're there that make it clear that you're in the right spot. And it sounds like that's what it was for you at Lincoln. While you were there, you spent 3 years as an assistant and then eventually you get an opportunity to take over as the head coach for a season. But talk a little bit about what you learned as an assistant that helped you when you became a head coach.
I think the one thing that I learned was, first of all, I truly appreciate my boss, Pat Lepper, at the time for having the trust in me to delegate, right? And he felt comfortable with enough to let me, he just gave me things and gave me tasks to do and I would knock them out. And that obviously gained more trust. But him giving me that opportunity to do more and continue to do more year in and year out ultimately prepared me for having an opportunity to be a head coach, because if I'm able to know what the budget is and how to work the budget and understand that, you know, we got to have these conversations with our vice president about, you know, travel and whatever it is, you know, these conversations that you got to have, or these, how we go about certain things and how we handle academics and how we handle this and how we do this. And having him, you know, having him delegate those things to me, right? Ultimately, again, I talk about those transferable skills, gave me a wider skill set to understand and to be, coherent about what's going on and how things are should be handled. And talk, you know, he gave me scheduling, right? This is the first time I really had to do college scheduling and, you know, and what's college scheduling looks like and when, what day can we play? Can we do a back to back here? And, well, we won't be home for a few games here. So we need to find a away game here and what a guaranteed game is. And so I'm learning as I go. And, you know, I think that was the biggest takeaway I had as an assistant was being able to have certain tasks that ultimately would prepare me for if there was an opportunity to be a head coach, that it would happen. So that was my thought process in that. And, you know, I took everything that I can handle, and I tried to knock it out the park. And, you know, I appreciate him having trust in me and doing those things because, like I said before, it allowed for my skill set to be widened and understand what it really looks like to run a college program.
Absolutely. Now you get a chance to be the head coach. What's that transition like? What was different? What was unexpected? Just give me an idea of sort of what it was like for you to take over that head coaching position and what you learned in that first season.
I always joke and say, I'm like, man, I was so bad. I was so bad. Like, dude, you don't know what you're doing. So first of all, when everybody says it's different, that one seat over is different, it's night and day. And the reason is because you take everything personally, right? Like, dang, we just lost two in a row. That was me, right? It doesn't matter what happened or something, like that was me. We lost two in a row because I'm not the best coach that I could be, or dang, this kid has a two D's and one C and he's on the borderline and getting an F. That's on me. We're not doing enough study hall. We're not doing this. We're not. So everything at that point became a little bit more personal. And I think one of the biggest transitions I had to make was because as an assistant, I was more so the liaison between the players and our head coach, right? So guys can come to me and be like, coach, man, like this is going on, but you know, I need some help. And, you know, there might be some things that I don't want to put on our head coach's plate that I'll just take, right? And so he doesn't have to know about it or don't have to really worry about, right? And I'll do it and things of that matter, or, you know, this conversation that they just want to have, you know, with me. And I, you know, just like, all right, cool. Like, but now it's like a point where I'm the guy that needs a liaison. And right. I need that buffer because and it's different when you have kids that you coached as an assistant and now you transition being the head coach, because there's a different expectation level that I have now. Not necessarily saying it's a different one, but the expectation I have now is going to be vocalized a little different than it was when I was assistant, if that makes sense. Because of what that title holds. And I had these conversations with those guys. That was the first thing I did when I got the opportunity to be a head coach, is I had those conversations. Like, I want you guys to know these things. Know this. I am still the same Coach Ed. I'm still the same Coach McGee. I have not changed. Just the position that I am, but the position that I am in, that I'm in, has changed, right? Like, I'm still this same dude. I'll joke. I'll play around with you, and you know, I'll do all those things. But my expectation level and the way that I'm going to carry out those expectations are going to be a lot different. And if you can rock with me on this, right, we're going to be fine, right? But if there's a, you know, if you really don't think you can, then, you know, we got to talk about what the alternative is. So those are the conversations that I had to have with those guys, especially the returners who were coming back at that time. And but like I said, man, you know, it's so much different when it comes to that. And being able to vocalize and articulate and teach in different ways that you necessarily didn't really think about when you were an assistant, right? How to reach certain guys and what certain guys respond to is also different too. So for me, man, I look back at it and we started off, I think 0-6 to start the year. And I was literally like in the slums, like, man, I have no idea what I'm doing.
It's harder than it looks, huh?
Oh man. And people, you know, people just don't understand. Like at that, it's like, geez, I was like, we can't win a game. And shoot, we had 2 neutral games and 4 away games in that span. And I'm like, what are you doing with scheduling? Like, who made this schedule? And I'm looking at myself in the mirror and it's like, this is ridiculous. So yeah, it's a learning experience. And, you know, I was fortunate and blessed enough to have, you know, people that I can lean on and have these conversations. You know, one of my good friends who's another Division II coach, in Indiana, Boomer Roberts, he called me and, he sent me some text messages, and he was just like, listen, keep pouring into those guys, right? Like, you know what you're in this for. Obviously we want to win. We want to compete. And he was kind of giving me his story about like, I probably won 2 games my first year as a head coach. Right. And I'm just like, man, and you know, and like just having, you know, people in your corner that understand and have a heart, right, to reach out and have a heart to share their experiences and be vulnerable. That's what the coaching profession should be about. It should be about those shared experiences. It should be about, you know, lifting each other up. And obviously, you know, if we're competing. But you know, at the end of the day, man, it's about developing those relationships and being there for, you know, especially if you've been in it before, being there for those younger coaches who are coming up and they're trying to figure it out. And, you know, so I was blessed to have, you know, people in my corner that encouraged me and lifted me up during that time and lifted us up during that time. So, but nah, Mike, it's not an easy transition, to say the least.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
All right, let's talk about the transition going the other way. So now you go to North Park. Mm-hmm. Tell me about the why behind that and what made North Park an attractive situation for you.
So this is another crazy story. So at the end of our season, I was planning to go. My wife and I went down to New Orleans for the Final Four. This is our first Final Four. So we're like, yeah, we're going to do it. So we were super excited. We're driving to the airport, and I get like somebody sends me a text message, and it was like, hey, did you see that email about an all employee meeting and followed by all student faculty meeting or all student meeting? I was like, nah, I didn't pay attention to it, or I didn't see it just yet. So I look on my phone. I was like, that's kind of weird. I'm not going to be there because I'm on my way to the airport. So this is kind of awkward, but I guess they had a Microsoft team set up for it. So we get to the airport. I'm in a terminal with my wife, and I jump on this Microsoft Teams meeting, and it's the president of the college. He jumps on, and he's talking about, Lincoln and his history. And I'm like, this is kind of weird. And he finishes off with like, barring, any unforeseen circumstances, Lincoln College will be closing down at the end of the semester. And my eyes got super big. My jaw dropped. My wife is, she's listening on, like she's got an earbud in and she's listening and she looks at me and I'm just like, babe, I don't know what to do. Like, what does this mean? I'm like going on a super high, like, we're going to have some good, at the time down in New Orleans, like, goodness gracious, like, I just lost my job, right? And at that moment, the first thing that I could think about was my kids, the student athlete. And I was like, man, I'm not there. Like, I can't even talk to them about what's going on. Like, that is hurting me. It's hurting me. So I'm on a flight for like 3 to 4 hours. I text our group chat. I'm like, hey, fellas, as soon as I land, we're going to jump on a Microsoft Teams meeting or a Zoom meeting, and we're going to talk. And, I know you guys are probably going to know the news before we can jump on, but I'm just letting you know that we're going to talk about this. So as soon as I get to New Orleans, we get into the room, I jump on the Zoom, and, I'm fighting back tears at this point, like trying to have this conversation about what's going on and how, regardless of, what the situation is, we're going to help you guys move forward. We're going to do what we need to do. It was probably one of the toughest conversations to have, as a coach, at that point. So, at this juncture, I'm like, okay, it is what it is at this point. I got a few people down here I can connect with, talk to, try to get their advice and see what's going on. And, I did that. And, coming back here, I started, investigating jobs and trying to see what's open. And at this point, and again, I think God just works in these mysterious ways that, are unfathomable at times. And, a lot of people didn't know that my wife and I were doing distance for that year, or those years that I was at Lincoln. Like, we weren't in the same household. We just got married about a year and a half ago. So when I got the job at Lincoln, or it was announced the same week we got married. So we got married, went on a honeymoon, and then I'm in Lincoln, Illinois, and she's in Chicago, 2.5 hours away. So and people don't know, like, I'm living in like Champaign area. She lives in Chicago. I'll drive up, on the weekends if I can. She'll come down to the games and she'll stay the night. Like, it was hectic, right? And for me, I was just like, okay, I want to find a place where we can be together, right? I want to be close. I want to be, near you and all those things. So it was a opportunity where I actually was, and I shouted out Boomer Roberts already. So North Park was open, and at that time, Boomer's one of his former players got the job, and he called Sean Smith, who's our head coach now. He called him. He's like, "Hey, you need to take Ed McGee as your assistant. Like, I don't care what's going on. Like, I don't, you know, you need this dude on your staff." And when he said that, Sean called me, and I was literally on my way to Chicago. And as I'm on my way to Chicago, Sean and I have like a 45 minute to an hour talk, and we hit it off like right away. You know, we're talking about kind of philosophies. We're talking about, you know, how we approach the game, and, you know, what we like and what we don't like. And we're just like, we're having at it. And I get off the phone, and I say to myself, I'm like, "Oh yeah, I can work for this guy." Right. And, I was still in the mix with some other jobs at the time. And, you know, he thank God for Coach Smith. He held out, you know, moving forward with anybody else. And I told him, like, "Hey, coach, like, I'm in the mix here with a couple of jobs that, you know, I'm interviewing right now and hit these things, and these are other head coaching jobs. So if these fall through, you know, I'm over there with you, and we're going to get this thing rolling." So it was about, you know, at this point, it's around, March or Aprilish, May. And it's like these 30 days that it was probably about 30 days or so that, you know, we're talking still, you know, kind of figuring out what's going on. And, you know, once those other jobs actually fell through, I was just like, "You know what, let's roll." And, it kind of happened that way. And, you know, I'm blessed to be a, you know, able to say that I'm a 20 minute drive from home now instead of 2.5 hours. Right. So, it all worked out like it should have worked out. Lord knows that if Lincoln didn't close down, I'll probably still be at Lincoln. Right. And, you know, still being the head coach, but the jump, you know, going from being a head coach back to assistant, ultimately I feel as if has made me a better assistant. And I say that because there are certain things and aspects that, especially helping out Coach Sean, who's a new head coach, right? I was literally him a year ago.
Right. Right? Yeah, absolutely.
And I wish I had somebody, and I had a great assistant when I was at Lincoln, but, you know, there's always a way that you can, or there's other situations where there's some people that you want to lean on that have been in this situation before, right? And knows what this looks like, how this can impact, and what you can say and what you can do. So for me, I felt like it ultimately made me a better assistant. And again, it kind of goes back to those two words that I keep talking about, is being humble and servantship, right? I'm from being the head guy down back to being the guy who's the server, right? And as a head coach, you're serving as well, but now I'm serving the team and I'm serving my head coach, right? And having an opportunity to do that and, you know, do it with someone who's you know, pretty similar in age and kind of similar paths and competitive spirit and, you know, those things, it's a great combination. And I'm blessed to be where I am, and blessed to be at North Park University, and, you know, excited for what the future holds for the Vikings.
Plus, you can check off another level of college basketball, man.
I can do that. That is for sure. Because I've been all over the place. But yeah, for sure.
What do you like about the Division III level so far?
Man, it's a great and competitive level of basketball. I'm biased, but I think we're in one of the top Division III's in the country as far as conference wise. And it's a battle, man. It's a lot of fun to compete in. The student athlete's commitment is so much, not different, but it's a different feel, right? Like, dudes are really ready to like compete and want to get better, get in the gym. And, the level itself is great because of the mixture of different styles that you get. And, there are dudes who, there's transfers who played at Division I level. There are transfers who played at Division II level. D3 level, and then, you know, there's some freshmen that come out of nowhere who are All-American dude. Like, it's crazy. And, you know, it's, I always think like, hey, man, this is another level that I get to see, you know, the different dynamics of what it looks like. And, at the end of the day, man, it's a great level of basketball. And I encourage, you know, don't be like Coach McGee. Don't be like me, man. I entertain, and, you know, if you got interest in something or interest in a Division III, Division II, whatever it is, go on those visits, take those visits, you know, experience it. And, you know, the campuses that we've been on so far, we've been on the road quite a bit, but the campuses that we've been on are gorgeous. The facilities are great. Like, it's, you know, if you didn't know about the level or haven't been in level, you wouldn't know. So, just blessed to have an opportunity to branch out and, you know, discover a different level of basketball.
Yeah, it's really interesting when you start thinking about what the Division III level of basketball is all about. We've really tried on the podcast to sort of advocate for players, coaches, whoever, just making sure that whatever you do, whatever decisions you make, that you find the right fit regardless of the level. And I think there's such a there's a lot of misinformation about there, or just people that think that it's Division I or bust. Yeah. And I think about, like, your story resonated with me, because when I was a high school player, I was kind of the same way. I'm like, I want to go play Division I. And I was fortunate enough to be able to do that. But I look back now and, you know, part of me wonders, you know, hey, I got lucky. I ended up in the right place for me. I had a coach that liked me and I had a really good career, but things probably could have gone differently for me if I'd have gone somewhere else. And, you know, it's just, it's amazing the number of people that make a mistake coming out of school and go somewhere that's not a good fit because it's a level that they perceive that they should be at. And then you have guys that look around and find the school that's the right fit academically and athletically, and boom, they go and they, you know, they're in the right spot and they have a great career and they get to play and they improve and they get better and they get a great education. And I think Division III basketball, there's just a lot of misconceptions about it out there amongst players. And I think parents and people just don't know how good that level of basketball is and how good you have to be able to play it. And I'm sure that one of the things that I always think about when I think about somebody who's kind of been on your career path, when you think about the recruiting side of it, and obviously when you were at the Paul, you weren't involved completely in the recruiting, but just being able to get yourself adjusted to, hey, what are the types of players that we're looking for? What's the
correct?
What's the level that we need to be able to get guys to come here? And obviously, if you're going to be successful at the Division III level, you got to be recruiting some guys who are probably borderline scholarship players, either at the Division II or NAI or even Division I level. So what's that adjustment been like as you've kind of gotten out on the road and you're starting to look at guys that are 2023s for next year?
Yep. So that's a great question, and that's a great insight on that, because I think, you know, and this is at every level, right? Like, you want to recruit above the level that you're at if you want to be successful, right? So if you're at the Division III level, you probably want to get some Division II, you know, if you could get a big Division II NAI high NAI guy, then you're in the mix, right? If you're a Division II guy, you're actually recruiting Division I's, right? So for me, like, and for us, it's very similar to that, right? And, you know, Coach got the job in April. He hired me in May. And in that span from April to August, we brought in, I think, eight transfers we brought in. And, you know, we got a transfer who was a former walk-on. Down in Stetson, he's on our team now. We have a Division II transfer who's on our team. We have two Division IIIs who transfers who start. So we took the transfer route this year, and right now it's working pretty well for us at the moment. So you know, it's different, right? And obviously, we're still recruiting for 2023, and we're looking at, you know, we're looking at talent, very talented kids, and you know, the differences is a little bit too, that obviously we can't offer athletic scholarships. So, you know, one of the main questions that we always talk, you know, about to recruits is, you know, what's your GPA? This is how we can break down the academic money that you're going to get. And, you know, if you're you got FAFSA done and you can get your Pell Grant and this, and, you know, so it's that portion of it that I think that is, more strategic when it comes to recruiting, because obviously you want to get the most talented players, but you also get most talented players that can pay. Right. So it's a little bit different, especially when you're recruiting freshmen and those things. It's that aspect of it that you got to really dive into and understand that. And, you know, I think as a recruiter, or as a assistant who's recruiting, to have the creativity, right, to make sure that these kids can get in and make sure that these kids can afford it, right? Like, that's crucial. And I'm, you know, even speaking at the NAI level, like, we didn't have full ride scholarships, right? We had a pool of money where we had to, you know, piece it together here, piece it together there. So it's the creativity part too about what you want to do with the scholarship or the lack thereof, when it comes to recruiting. And, you know, for me, I love it because you're getting guys who are, you know, have to be dedicated to the classroom in a certain capacity, right? Because if they don't, then, you know, the amount of money that they're receiving from the school is not going to be what they want to receive, right? And it's a blessing in that way too. So, it's a different way of recruiting. And when it comes to that, right? Cause we can't offer you scholarship money, but what we do offer, you know, is that, you know, we're going to love you. We're going to coach you hard. We're going to compete. We're going to have fun. Like, if you want to have a great college experience, right? That's what we're going to provide. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's what kids want, right? Whether they go to Division I, Division II, Division III, kids want to be able to play and they want to have a great experience. So if you can provide those things and, you know, correlate your culture to those things, then you'll find the right players for your team.
Absolutely. All right, Edwin, we are coming up towards an hour and a half. I want to ask you one final two-part question. So part one is, when you look ahead over the next year or two, what do you see as being your biggest challenge? And then the second part of the question is, when you think about what you get to do every day, waking up and going in and coaching at North Park, what brings you the most joy? So your biggest challenge and then your biggest joy.
It's a great question. I think the biggest challenge that I have is getting myself better, when it comes to being a coach who, how can I put this? Being a coach who is as consistent and as reliable as I can be, right? I think there's times where, you know, obviously the balance of home life and coaching life, right? I'm a year and a half in, right, of marriage, and my wife and I were thinking about having kids. And, you know, when that aspect comes into play, it's a lot different than what you have when you don't have kids, or the things that you do when you don't have kids. So for me, I want to continue to be the best, like, husband and father eventually that I'm going to be, but also the best coach I can be, and making sure that those, that part of me aligns, right? And that I'm not, taken away from something to take away from something else. So I think that's the biggest challenge for me moving forward. And then the biggest joy, man, I think is just being able to come home every day after a long day of work, or after a loss, or after, you know, a long travel back from a game. Those are some things that people take for granted, right? Like, I was doing distance last year, and, you know, my wife and I, while we were dating and engaged, we did distance before. So the joy that I get is win, lose, or draw. Like, I get to come home, and be with my family. And, you know, I got extended family with the players that I have and the coaching staff that I have. So, that's the biggest joy that I have right now. And it excites me, and it allows for me to be a better coach, because I don't have to necessarily worry about, you know, driving 2.5 hours and making sure that I'm here for a certain event or things of that matter. I'm right down the street, and, you know, that allows for, you know, my wife and my family to come to the games more often and those things too. So that's my biggest joy, man. And obviously being able to coach the game that I love, I mean, there's nothing like it.
That's well said. Before we wrap up, Edwin, I want to give you a chance to share how people can reach out to you, connect with you, whether you want to share email or social media, yep, whatever you feel comfortable with. And then after you do that, I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Absolutely. You guys want to follow me, it's at Edwin McGee on Twitter or at Edwin McGee _ on Instagram. So if you want to follow me, go right ahead. I've tried to be active on there, recruiting, anything. So questions, anybody wants to ask or anybody wants to get in touch with me, feel free.
Edwin, can I thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule tonight to jump on and join us? Really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun getting to know a little bit more about you and your basketball journey. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.